Ante Up is your poker magazine dedicated to the everyday player and their poker rooms. Pick up a free copy at your favorite poker room nationwide each month. But Ante Up is much more than a magazine. Visit anteupmagazine.com daily for breaking news and each week download our award-winning poker cast. Join us on our action-packed poker cruises to exotic destinations. Ante Up, it's your poker magazine.
From the Ante Up headquarters in Tampa Bay, Florida, it's the Ante Up PokerCast. And now, here are two guys who think they know how to play poker, Chris Cosenza and Scott Long.
It's November 13th, 2020. You're listening to the best PokerCast on the planet. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Long.
Hey, it's Friday the 13th.
It is. I didn't even think about that.
That's why we record on Thursday.
Get my black cat out. I do have a ladder in the garage that's set up, so maybe I'll walk under that tomorrow.
Walk under that tomorrow, yeah. See, that's, you don't ever play poker on Friday the 13th.
You listen with Shatter a Mirror, right?
You listen to shows or whatever, but, oh, that reminds me, last night I watched this, like, Home Improvement show while the hurricane was bearing down on us.
Was it actually storm. Home Improvement with Tim the Tool?
No, it was some show called Hometown. But they had this backsplash in their kitchen that they were going to, and it was all mirrors. And it was who the hell puts mirrors as backsplash? But they were breaking each mirror with a hammer. And I'm like, 7 years, 7 years, 7 years, 7 years. I mean, they broke like 50 mirrors. It was crazy.
Yeah, they definitely should not be playing poker tomorrow. So.
Definitely not.
Well, I don't know if it's just because the election is over, depending on who you are, or what, but it was a slow news week in the poker world. So we're going to give a golf clap to Paul Seaton, who writes for CalvinAir.com, for providing our entire banter portion of the show today, because there's no other news out there to talk about. But here's what Seaton wrote. He published an article with seven quotes from quote-unquote modern poker pros that he says are inspiring to today's poker players, and kind of want to see what we think of each. So do you want to take them each one at a time?
Sure, absolutely.
Right. That might get us up to a 24-minute show today. So. All right, the first one from Dominic Nitsch. Study hard and realize it's mostly hard work. Never blame anything on luck.
Yeah, this is what I like about this, and we had written stuff like this, or I think I have at least, that in the past for the magazine, that said poker always translates to great life lessons, you know? And that's where this is going. I 100% agree with that, not only for this, but for life as well.
Yeah, I think what I like about this is it's all right to celebrate luck, but not to blame luck. If you do that, then you're doing really well, I think, right?
So absolutely.
If you're like, woo, boy, that was a two-outer that I'm glad I got and be excited about it. And then at the same time, oh, my gosh, oh, no, he got a two-outer. That happens.
Yep.
You can do that.
Yep.
You're going to survive in this game, I think.
So. Yeah, you learn from your mistakes. Don't get yourself in that situation where you need a two-outer next time and then move on.
Exactly. You know. And I like that Dominic, when he talks out loud, he spells realize with an S instead of a Z. So. All right. Number two from Jason Kuhn. Understand the ups and downs of poker. And if you get too high or too low, you're just not going to be around long.
Yeah. Pretty sound. It's just like real life.
Yeah. We've seen this. I mean, it's not the most insightful poker quote ever, but it is absolutely one of the most accurate.
Yeah.
I mean. We've seen so many flash in the pans just have an amazing year, and then, you know, they're bagging groceries at Walmart next year. And then, of course, if you never win, you're eventually going to run out of money at some point and not be able to play. So, you're looking for that happy medium. And as you mentioned, too, like in life in general, too.
Right? Yeah.
All right. Quote number three from Fedor Holes. One of the biggest lessons poker has taught me is to not be too focused on results, but focus on the process and making good decisions. I like this one a lot.
You do? So explain.
Yeah, this is kind of what we talk about in the hand of the week all the time, right? Is that we're not talking about being results oriented. We're not talking about that specific hand, even though that's what we're breaking down. What we're trying to do is to get the listeners to think about the concepts involved in that hand, because you're never going to play that same hand again, ever again. but you are going to run into those concepts. So if you're working on the concepts and making the good decisions and not just what the results are, you're going to do much better, I think.
Yeah, that's a good point. And it's funny because at one point or another, whether it's a magazine or the show, we've always touched base on a lot of these things. And it's great. We've just never actually put them down and into inspirational quotes from ourselves, you know?
And I'm sure we're going to say this through all of them, but this is a good one for life as well, too, I think. We've all had a jillion discussions about the election these last couple weeks, right?
Yeah.
But even beyond like the presidential election, I had a good conversation with someone about someone losing, and I'm like, you got to remember that even if you lose an election, you can still win an election, just depending on the issues you raise and the people you inspire to go forward. And history is just filled with people like that who lost an election but actually ended up winning. And you can apply that to a lot of places. So again, it's all focused on the process and making the decisions. And at the end of the day, if the poker gods or the voters come out differently, doesn't mean that you lost. Truly lost, right?
Yeah, I mean, you didn't win the election, but you have, or you didn't win the battle, but you could be laying the groundwork to still win the war, kind of thing.
Exactly.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. Hey, that was kind of inspirational, right? There you go. We could quote that. Quote Chris Cosenza.
It's a shoe there. A little like cutting onions here, right? I don't even think of that. Jeez. Where that came from. All right, quote number four, Justin Bonomo. I live two completely different lives. When I'm in L.A., I go out and party a lot. I love the nightlife scene there. But when I'm in Vegas or traveling to any tournament, I'm super boring. I never drink. I never stay up late. I'm always super focused, and I'm kind of a nit when it comes to getting enough sleep.
Yeah, that reminds me of like some of our strategy writers. Whenever World Series time was rolling around, they would always pretty much give you this as the lesson. You know, hey, if you want to go to Vegas and enjoy it, that's fine, but go a week early, enjoy it for that week, and then when it comes time for tournaments, be super boring, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's the people that get caught up in the trappings of this lifestyle are the ones that flame out really quickly. So, and it's easy to get caught up in it. I mean, if you're doing really well at a young age and you're making money that you never thought you had and every night's a party, that's great. But eventually the party does end. So, yeah, the folks that treat it as a job are the ones that succeed in it. So,
yep, because it is. It's a job.
All right. Bryn Kenny, deal with your stupid mistakes and never let the past bring you down. You start blaming other things and you never get back to where you want to be.
Yeah, that's reminiscent of some of the earlier quotes you've already heard.
Yeah, another life lesson too.
Yeah, right? Yeah, exactly.
Yep. If you're always constantly blaming somebody else for your failures, you're never going to fix yourself. So, be harder on you than anybody else is harder on you, I think.
Yeah.
All right, Daniel Coleman. I find it to be a much greater accomplishment and necessary if through solidarity we can get everyone at the bottom to all move up a couple rungs in the ladder. This can be done once we stop idolizing those who are able to make it to the top.
This does not surprise me that this came from Daniel Coleman.
Not at all, right?
Not even a little bit.
I saw his name on there. I'm like, oh boy, what's this going to be? So it's hard to criticize the thought. The thought makes a lot of sense, and I agree with it. But again, it's the way it's worded, I think. It's like a finger in your face.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah, it's
not
like
inspiring like some of these other ones.
At first, it started to be inspiring. It's like lifting people up, you know, to make them better, and then it's all of a sudden it's like, and then yeah, knocking the other ones down, and just it started out as a nice idea, and then it got kind of, you know.
Well compare it to the famous rising tide lifts all boats.
Right.
You leave it right at that. That is super inspiring.
Exactly.
When you go this extra part, and I'm like, then you lose the effect. So.
Hey.
Yeah, a few words usually make it longer, more words. So, all right, final one from Makita Badziakowski.
Badziakowski.
Are you sure it's not pronounced Huff? Because I got that one down.
He got Huff, so this comes from Makita Huff.
People call us gamblers when in reality poker is such a great lesson, and the knowledge you get from our game is very applicable in a variety of real life situations.
Yeah. Yeah. That's pretty much spot on.
It's a good sum up of the previous six there and the overall seven. So
it's kind of like what we were always trying to prove to people when they're general public is that you may think we're gambling, but it's zero difference between this and playing golf against somebody heads up, you know, because it's a skill. You have to navigate the course just like we have to navigate the board, you know, whatever it is. And if I'm better than you in the long run, I'm going to win. And he's right. And that's some of the stuff that we've talked about, too, in our columns and stuff like that in the past, is that things that happen in poker really do apply to you in real life. And if you can tackle them in life, you can tackle them in this game.
Absolutely. I think it's a good reminder, again, of how much poker mirrors life and life mirrors poker. And really, any kind of game, I think. We just started watching this Queen's Gambit last night, which is phenomenal. We haven't finished it yet, so no spoilers. Any more than my wife's already spoiled it. It's about chess. Come on! I didn't know that. We're four episodes through the seven, and there's a really powerful moment where she talks about she feels safe in the board. It's 64 squares, and she feels like she can control those 64 squares, and where life is way more than 64 squares, right?
Yeah, yeah.
It's a little bit more difficult when you get out of a confined environment like a chessboard or a poker game, but so life is harder. But
I for years I kept toying with the idea of writing a column about how poker is a lot like being a police officer, and it's like being a cop is generally 90% boredom and then 10% of sheer terror. Sure. Which is kind of like what playing poker is like. You know, you sit and you fold 90% of your hands, and the 10% of your hands you are playing, you're out of position and you're playing against somebody who can take all your money, and it's scary. Also, you have to defend your blinds, you know, because they're trying to steal, so you have to defend. There was this whole kind of thing, and it was like really reflecting life as a police officer or something, and, you know, a lot of respect. And but same thing. I mean, it just there are ways that you can look at a poker game depending on the game, the way it just looks at. The way it's just like life. And you're right. I mean, I'm looking forward to that show. So no spoiler alerts, by the way. I'm going to watch that probably this weekend when I get a chance. So
did that book idea of yours get defunded? No, I'm joking. But, you know, the other thing that's a good analogy with a police officer. The other part I would add, too, is that 90% is boredom. You are looking around and keeping aware and learning, right?
Yeah. So. Yeah.
Even though it's not action, it's important to the job that you're not resting and being distracted by something else, which is very much the case in poker as well, too.
Exactly.
So, exactly. Good analogies.
Yeah, cool.
All right, reopenings. I'm sorry. Here's this week's update on casino and poker room reopenings. In California, Livermore Casino has opened an outdoor gaming facility with poker. In Florida, Casino Fort Pierce has reopened with poker. In Pennsylvania, Rivers Casino Pittsburgh has reopened its poker room. In Washington, Seven Cedars has reopened its poker room for tournaments. And we now have 204 reopened poker rooms in the United States that we've been tracking. And you can go to anteupmagazine.com/reopen, where we list verified details on casino poker room reopenings. And if you have any updates, email us at editor@anteupmagazine.com. We're also emailing a weekly e-blast with updates that you can subscribe to on the homepage at anteupmagazine.com. So we are down to only one Florida room that's still closed. That's Gulfstream Park. So that's an interesting little milestone. mile something. And I thought this was interesting that Seven Cedars. Now, I'm not really familiar with this casino. It's an actual casino. It's not a card club. And what they did pre-COVID. But they're not doing cash games. They're only doing tournaments and like Fridays and Saturdays. So it seems like the rest of the poker world is starting with cash games and then easing into tournaments when they feel comfortable doing it. This one's the flip. They're doing the tournaments.
That's kind of weird.
And then may or may not be adding cash games later on. So again, I don't know. Maybe that's what they did before. And if that's the case, then it's really not that surprising, but I thought that was interesting.
Well, I will note that my wife's oldest son went right to running, didn't walk when he was a kid. So people do it; they can run before walking. So maybe that's what Seven Cedars is doing, you know.
Yeah, it's just and the reason I bring that up and why I think other rooms are doing it is it's when you're controlling the chips, it's much easier to do it in a cash game than with tournaments when you're introducing them to different players. So, though, I don't know how many casinos are actually still doing it where you buy your chips at the table and those chips are cashed in and sanitized before they're put back out. So if they've gotten away from that, there's really no reason not to do tournaments at that point, because that's the reason not to do a tournament. It's, I guess, you got people breaking down and going to different tables and different chips. I mean, I guess you're introducing yourself to more people, right?
Yeah.
In tournament when tables break down. So I guess maybe there is an extra element there other than just the chips, but I don't know. Doesn't seem like that drastic of a difference. So, but
Annie updates. Papes, the Annie Up fans free online tournament series on PokerStars Play Money site, is available everywhere. Details on how to join can be found at bit.ly/PAIPS. Games are on the 6th, 16th, and 26th of every month and rotate disciplines with a main tournament followed by a second chance event. PokerStars lets you claim 15,000 free chips every 4 hours. Join the Annie Up Fans group Facebook page and post within the group to get feedback on hands, ask call-the-floor questions, or just discuss anything poker. Check out our 11 vintage Annie Up logo designs on merchandise at annieupmagazine.com/shop. Buy t-shirts, hoodies, sweatshirts, phone and laptop cases, coffee and drink mugs, and more with your choice of Annie Up Magazine, Annie Up Pokercast, or Annie Up Poker Tour logos. If you have a hand of the week, listener spotlight, or call the floor submission, email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com or post in the Annie Up fans group on Facebook. Each week, we spotlight a listener who emails us, and if they haven't won something from us in the past year, just like we do with Call the Four and Hand of the Week, we send them something cool. Comes from Kirby Steining. He's playing 2-4 limit at a locals casino in Las Vegas with a sports promotion based on scores by a selected team. Random table and seat wins $100 if team scores a touchdown, and a splash pot of $60 is added to the next hand at the table. Our table wins. Now remember that this is a 2-4 limit game. Is there any reason not to play any two cards when the pot is $63 before the flop? In this case, only four players saw the flop and two folded to a $2 bet. This seems insane. Standard $4 bets by both players on the turn and river. Oh, by the way, my 10-6 offsuit 2-pair lost to a set of 7s from a player dealt 7-5 offsuit.
Yeah, what I posted there was I'll never forget this hand. I was at Thunder Valley during one of our events. I was playing a 4-8 limit game, and the same thing. They splashed the pot. Our table won, got $100. I played Deuce Trey offsuit and won a $400 pot when I rivered the wheel and probably crushed somebody because it was a gutter, I think, that came in. But yeah, so to his point, at the beginning of the hand, especially in 2-4, I mean, that's 15-1 on your money, right?
Yeah.
So, and particularly if you're at a table where it's not getting raised, which it sounds like it is, I mean, you got to get up and get that free money. Now, if he gets crazy, and that's the difference between this story and my story, it was raised, like, all the way through, and I was just riding a rush and just kept pumping the money in and then hit that beautiful card.
Yeah,
got the 400. But the lesson is, yeah, I mean, do the math. I'm like, you've got to be in there with this card. And I thought some of the other comments were interesting, too, that, you know, if players are this nitty at this game with a splash pot, you really should be considering raising
yeah,
cards.
Yep.
And driving as many people out of this pot as possible. I mean, it's hard to think that, you know, a limit raise would get rid of a 7-5 offsuit, but considering only four players sell the flop,
yeah,
two folded on the flop to $2, you never know, right? So, I mean, it's definitely worth it to me with any hand all the way down to 7-deuce to put a raise in at a table like this and try to get that free money. It's crazy. The people are in this game and playing this promotion and don't know how to play it.
Yeah, before you're entering the pot, there's already $63 in the middle and it's limit 2-4. You got to be kidding me. You're not playing every card no matter what. That's crazy.
Yeah.
Well, you were right, Kirby. Yeah, I would play in that room more often.
And I will say it does hurt, though, when you have a crappy hand like 10-6, like Kirby did. You made the right decision to get in. You hit your two pair and then lose to a set from a set of five. So it does hurt. But again, back to those quotes, you know, it's about the process of making good decisions. And you made better decisions than other players, even though you lost money on this hand.
I got to tell you, I don't play a lot anymore. But back in the day, I used to play all the time. And I never once was the beneficiary of even having a splash pot hit my table or random seat. Never once have I ever benefited from any of these promotions. Not once. Not once. I'm talking when I'm out there for the World Series and I was there for a week by myself and that's all I did was play once I was done reporting. And or when you and I would go on our trips and we'd be like bored out of our minds with where we were, so we'd have to play. I mean, we hours and hours that we've put in. Never once did I have a splash pot. I'm so jealous of you.
Well, to be honest, I was excited about it because I don't play a lot of I haven't played in many rooms that do this. So the fact that I actually got chosen that one time, that was the only time I've ever got a splash pot. And really, to be honest, I've got a high hand once, which we talked about here at Tampa Bay Downs, and they allowed Omaha to be part of it, which was great. Other than that, there's not a lot of promotions that I think I can remember being a part of. So that's a lot of jackpot money I've spent, or you and I have spent, Annie Up has spent, without it coming back to us. So.
Oh, man. All right, call the four. Find yourself in a situation at your favorite poker room or home game and you're not sure what the proper ruling should have been? Email us at podcast@annieupmagazine.com and we'll have Hollywood Casino Toledo Director of Poker Elliot Schechter tell you how he would have ruled. This week's prize is a set up of J-Design playing cards, the official playing cards of Annie Up Poker Cruises, available at classicplayingcards.com. Comes from Voodoo. And this, you're going to have to hang on here because when I read this, it's going to be tough to read. So he said, is there a standard... What's that?
I cleaned it up a little bit for you. So
no, I know. It's just, it's weird. So it's going to take a little while. So here we go. And it's funny because we said you can write Elliot and then we're not going to need Elliot. But is there a standard how multiple board runs are dealt? Example scenarios. Flop comes, run twice, decision is made. Is it burn, turn one, burn, river one, burn, turn two, burn, river two, or... burn, turn one, turn two, burn, river one, river two, or burn, turn one, burn, turn two, burn, river one, burn, river two. If so...
I'm like trying to crack the Nazi code there.
It's like...
your Navajo wind talk.
Oh, man. Alan Dershowitz. All right, so if so, does it make a difference or change based on pre- or post-flop decision in the above order? Should all players in the hand make it unanimous? In a situation where this came up, three players were in the hand after the flop. Player one, the short stack, moved all in. Player two, the biggest stack, also moved all in. And player three called. Before the turn came, player three asked if player two if he wants to run it twice, and he said yes. The dealer quickly dealt the burn, turn, burn, turn, burn, river for a four-card burnt double board. Player one called the floor, hearing none of the conversation and didn't have the chance to stop the dealer. Player two tells player one that he and player three were doing it for the side pot. Player two ends up scooping both pots, but pretty much the entire table except for player two states player one was not involved in a decision for the runout that he was indeed part of. And further, that the main pot would have been won by player one if they had done one board or have done burn, turn one, burn, river one, either way.
All right, so we gave Elliot the week off this week. He's busy getting his poker rooms reopened. So, and I thought we could handle this without him. So
yeah,
obviously, if he's listening, he can... let us know if he has more he'd like to add to the conversation. So let's start with this. The fact that running it twice is a non-standard protocol
right.
in licensed casinos. So you're going to find very few that are going to allow this to happen anyhow. I know you watch the high stakes poker and it sounds like it happens everywhere, but that's really an extreme exception.
Right.
Most regulated poker rooms are not going to allow you to run it twice.
And this is why.
Yeah, exactly. And, you might run into this like in these Texas card clubs, because, again, they're not regulated by a gaming commission. So you might see it more likely there or other kind of private clubs. But an actual casino, you're probably going to be denied your option of running it twice if you ask them.
Right, right.
So start with that. So so then the next thing I would say is, if you are in a room that allows it, it doesn't necessarily mean that they are going to abide by any standards for how this is supposed to be done. So I don't want to say the wild, wild west here like we say on online, but you're kind of at their mercy to regulate this the way they want. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes. Okay.
So, but generally speaking, what it's supposed to be, it was the first one that you mentioned. You completely run out the first board,
yep.
Earn a card, and then completely run out the second board. So you don't alternate back and forth. You don't skip burnings or anything like that. So in this case, this is a double whammy, right?
Yeah.
I should have said, too, that running it twice can only happen when only two people were in the hand. So
right.
fact that we had three in this hand, it should not have happened. I understand those other two players would say it's because of the side pot and it doesn't affect the other player, but it does affect the other player, particularly in this situation when the board runouts were wrong and ended up costing that player the pot, right?
Yeah, that's exactly right. I mean, if they had done it the right way, it wouldn't have affected him as much because he was only playing for that first board anyway, and then they were playing for the second board, essentially, and the first board after that. But the way they did it, they altered the way the first person would have won. It's just not right. But yeah, when you do see it on TV and you see it in high stakes and anything else, it's always burn turn one, burn river one, burn turn two, burn river two. That's it.
And if you think about it, when you say run it twice, that's exactly what we're talking about. You're running out the first board,
right?
And then you run out a second board. I mean, it's almost illogical to me to think that anybody would do it any other way,
right?
I could see maybe a debate over burning before the second board, but again, that's the proper way of doing it. But I could see that maybe. I'm like, all right, fine. But I can't imagine anybody trying to explain to me why you would alter the Chris Cosenza destiny of the cards.
Exactly.
To finish this out. It just doesn't make any sense, right?
Exactly.
And then again, remember, just because some players all in and stuff, with the actions that you continue to do on the side with the other player does affect that player. You've got a third player in there. So, you're not going to get very far with me or I think anybody else on this argument that this player was not harmed by this run it twice discussion.
Yeah, I agree. We have a new O'Malley's move, so here it comes.
Another O'Malley's Move. I'm Malcolm O'Malley. A quick disclaimer for this episode, this isn't a case of do we have the best hand, this is a case of did we make the right move. We end up with pretty much the nuts, but the question lies in our decisions on the turn and perhaps pre-flop and flop action as well. This week we are playing $1, $2, no limit hold'em at our regular home game. The max buy-in here is $200. We've bought in for that and doubled up within the first hour or so. We sit with $395. The game is six-handed. The blinds post. The under the gun makes it $6 to go. This is the standard raise for this game. The under the gun is a decent player, but he can get out of line occasionally. He bought in for $200 and currently has $300. It's folded to us on the button, and we look down at the 8 of hearts, 8 of diamonds. All things considered, this is a decent hand, and maybe one we could play for a raise, but I don't want to get re-raised off of this. We call. The small blind folds, but the big blind calls. There's roughly $18 in the pot, and the flop is the jack of hearts, eight of spades, deuce of clubs. This is a fantastic flop for our hand. It's relatively dry, and we're only behind pocket jacks. But there's really no reason to believe that it's out there. The big blind and under the gun both check. I wouldn't mind giving either player a chance to catch up a little here, but I'm intrigued why the under the gun raised and then checked the flop. We check. The pot is still $18 and the turn is the deuce of spades. We have almost no fear now. The big blind checks, as does the under the gun, and we're going to see if we can get any value here at all. We make it $10 to go. The big blind folds, but the under the gun check raises us to $35 after a bit of thought. So, we're only losing to two unlikely hands. Are we seeing if we can get value on the river, or are we going to try to get our value now? What's the move?
It's time for the AdvancedPokerTraining.com Hand of the Week. Send your hands for situations. A podcast at AntiUpMagazine.com. If you haven't won something from us in the past year, you'll get a free membership to Advanced Poker Training, the world's number one poker training site. Brandon Huff,
yes,
also known as Makita Bajabajabajabajabaj. if you've just now joined us, I don't know where you've been. We're in the middle of 8 weeks of Brandon Huff hands. He's auditioning to be the new Vic G. So...
And didn't he send us a bunch more too, Scott? Like, didn't he send us?
He's got another one or two he sent us.
Oh, okay. All right.
Well, we have plenty of other folks' hands of the week stored up, so it'll be a while after next week before you hear me forget how to pronounce Brandon Huff.
Didn't you tell everybody next week's our last show?
Don't say that because the people believe it.
No, they won't believe it. They'll keep digging
them.
Me.
They don't pester you. They pester me.
So. They pester me, too.
All right, so we are in week 7 of this 8-hand discussion with Brandon Huff. So we got 2 more weeks to go for him. And so he likes to play in these New Hampshire card clubs, charity rooms up there. And this is where this hand comes from. It is a 2-5 no limit table. He has $300 in his stack. And he said, I sat down a short while ago and have no real good reads on anyone. There's a high hand promotion running, which always makes everyone play a lot looser and stickier. Under the gun limps in, player 2 or right raises to $30. This player has been splashing around in a number of pots, so I think his range is very wide. He's on us in the low jack with jack-jack.
Huh. And so it limped to us? Oh, wait, you said it raised to us. Okay,
yeah.
Raised 30.
Under the gun limped, and then a raise in the middle. Middle position player to $30.
I will call. I don't think I'll re-raise. I realize the guy is splashy, but there's still people behind us. It's just jack-jack. When you think about it, it's only Danny Nugranu's. It's only tens plus one. So, you know, and we always play jacks wrong no matter what we do with them. So I don't mind just calling here. It's almost like set mining, but if it comes all unders and this guy's kind of loosey goosey, then I think I'll be pretty confident. But at this time, I don't mind just calling.
Yeah, these are jacks, so let's just go ahead and assume you're going to lose your stack here. So it doesn't really matter how you're going to play. So play it however you want. Fold, raise, I don't care. You're still going to lose.
Somehow you'll fold and still lose. It'll be a fold deck. And...
even if you fold, yep. You're going to still lose in the buck, and the dealer's going to take their $300 from you so and distribute it fairly. So my concern here is I'm always concerned about the undergun limping in. And we haven't – he said we haven't been at this table long enough. We don't have any good reads. Don't know whether this under-the-gun limper – is the type of crafty player that would limp in with aces or kings or something like that, or if he's just a passive player that doesn't want to raise with, say, pocket fours or something, right?
Yeah.
So if we raise here, I mean, the good thing is we might get our answer. The bad thing is we might get our answer. So I think you're right. I kind of like calling the 30 here. Hopefully no one else comes around. Hopefully this under the gun is limping in with crap and gets out, and now our head's up against a splashy player, and now our jacks look a little bit better. If we raise here, I mean, obviously the benefit of that is we probably freeze out anybody else in the hand, which is nice, but if this under the gun limper is trying to be crafty, then he's going to raise us, and maybe the splashy player has a hand too, and then we're out without losing our entire stack, which is what I said, but we put a lot of money into it. I think we have a lot more value here by calling this $30 raise, which is a significant raise, right?
So. Yeah, I mean, you really want to make it 90 to go. It's a 30-year stack with jack-jack preflop, and you don't even know, like you said, the limper under the gun behind you might now shove, and you're like, oh, I'm stuck with jacks. This guy limped with ace-ace. Or the guy who, you know, raised at 30 legitimately has a hand this one time, like it always ends up happening in Hands of the Week. So
he's allowed to give good hands, folks.
Yeah, let's just be speculative and call it $30. That's 10% of your stack. That's acceptable.
All right, our hero says, I just call here. I was thinking that it was unlikely I would face a raise or more than one call since I'm in fairly late position and no one after me had seemed overly aggressive. I thought of raising, but given how sticky everyone has been, I wanted to see the flop and go from there.
So I'm assuming sticky means that they're calling stations.
I'm going to guess that's what he means.
They want to see flops and hands because of the promotion, and I'm assuming I've never heard that term before.
Maybe they're all, it's New Hampshire, maybe they're all eating Dunkin' Donuts. I don't know.
I thought you were going to make a maple syrup joke there somehow, but never mind.
No, I will not disrespect the New Hampshire maple syrup. Actually, the Vermont's a
little Vermont maple syrup, sorry. Yeah, I know.
So I did, I guess.
New England.
Yep. All right, he says, much to my surprise, the young lady in the small blind raises all in to $73. She has also been splashing around and has shown down some not very good hands. The under-the-gun player thinks for 10 to 15 seconds and calls the $73. The player who first raised calls the $43 more and is back on us.
Okay, I'm going to call. Right now, believe it or not, I don't think anyone has a better hand than us.
I would agree with you on that.
Right? Because, let's face it, there's enough money in the middle now that you're going to want to isolate these people if you have a big hand. You do not want to let four people see a flop now if you have ace-ace under the gun.
Right.
And if you have the $30 raise guy, if he has ace-ace or king-king or queen-queen, he's not going to want to see. He wants to get isolated with that small blind who probably just shoved on any decent ace or pair in her hand or something like that. Maybe. So I think that I might be inclined to do something crazy here.
I don't think it's crazy. I know what you're going to go.
Okay. I might shove.
But I might shove too.
I might shove.
Actually, I would clarify that by I am probably almost definitely shoving.
Yeah, I'm almost definitely shoving. Now, the only thing that I would do is that I might call, and then if it's a safe flop, then shove. But they may do that before me, and then they put me to the test. So I'm leaning 90% to the shove and 10% to the let's call like everyone else, and then unders, and then shove. But I'm leaning way toward the Scott Long shove here. So,
and how's it my shove now? You were going down that road first. I was just pushed
because I was never actually saying it, and then you said it before I said it. So now you've got the onus on you. But I'm going to shove too, I think.
All right. So here's why I feel fairly confident in the shove decision here. So we have an under the gun player that limped. We have a splashy guy that raises the 30, which is kind of an over raise. I don't know what the standard raise is there, but I can't imagine it's 30.
Right.
We called here. Now we've got somebody else that shoves for 73, and that could be all kinds of stuff. And then the other gun player, obviously he doesn't think very long, but calls rather than raises. So again, as you mentioned, I can eliminate ace-ace and king-king, which is what I was worried about with the other gun limper. He's got to have something else because it just doesn't make sense to just call that, I think.
Yeah, right.
Then the other player, the splashy player, obviously doesn't have a massive hand because he just called as well too, right? So back to what you said, I feel very confident that we have the best hand right now, but with three players in this hand, the chances of us having the best hand on the flop are very low.
Yeah.
So at this point, there's almost 300 in the pot right now, which is our stack. Let's just go ahead and get it in. Obviously, the one player is all in for less, so she's not going anywhere. But if the other two players fold, that's a great scenario for us, I think. Now we're only up against one player from the main pot.
Yeah.
And if not, I think we're getting commit money when we have the best of it, which is the decision you always try to get. Obviously, they can still run us down if we're up against an ace-king or ace-queen or something like that. But I don't want to play scared of the rest of this hand with this much money in the pot. If an ace, a king, a queen comes on that flop, what am I going to do? Am I going to fold to a bet? I don't want to be in that position. So at this point, let's drive those hands out or make them pay to hit their card.
It would help to know their stack sizes, but we don't. I don't think right.
Yeah, no, I've read everything we have. So yeah,
I mean, if the guy's got 90 left in front of them or 40 left in front of them or something, you know what I mean? And you're shoving, they're calling anyway, but
yeah.
Generally I think they probably have our stack sizes. So
that's a very good point. Yeah. If these other two players are pot committed, then the shove is not worth it at that point.
Cause right.
But if they're both sitting pretty deep and if they're both deep, they're probably going to call too, which is actually better, I think. So,
yeah.
For us. So, all right, that's what I'm going to do.
All right. We're shoving.
And I almost never shove. I mean, how many times on hand of the week in a cash game are you hearing Scott Long say shove?
Right. You don't say it till at least a turn.
Yeah. So I'm feeling pretty good about this, which means it's probably the wrong decision. All right, so Hero says the pot is almost $300 right now over my stack size. For some reason, the other gun player's smooth call of a raise and a 3-bet worried me. It doesn't worry me as much as him 4-betting. So, yeah,
right.
He says, that seemed like a play only done with a really premium hand, so I make the call. The flop is $294, and the flop is the Ace Tray 4 Rainbow. Let's see. It checks to us.
Shove.
Yeah.
Nobody hitting that ace doesn't bet out now. They all afraid of that ace.
Got to bet that ace, right? If you have it. Yep.
Yep, shove.
All right, let's see what happens. Apparently we check as well, too.
Oh, okay.
Now we're just opening up that turn to be a king, queen, anything that's going to be problematic for us, right? Oh, boy. All right, the turn is a king completing the rainbow. So our board is ace, tray, four, king, rainbow. And it checks around to us again.
Shove. These people are afraid of these cards. They haven't hit them.
I mean, at this point, I mean, this is going to be what really sucks, is if we check again and the queen comes and we lose this pot to, like, queen 10 or something like that.
Yeah.
I'm giving a poker.
Yeah.
Right?
You got to shove now.
I mean, we had two great chances to take this pot down, and we didn't. Actually, three, if you count the all-in preflop that we would have done. So,
yeah. And that violates the Scott Long rule. Never let a check around twice to you.
Exactly.
You always bet the second time around.
It's just usually a sign that nobody has anything. So.
Yeah. And I don't even think you need to shove here now. I think now you can get away betting 100. And then
I think you might get away with betting 10.
Even. Yeah, well, whatever, you know, with something acceptable, and then they'll still fold. You get your money back, and then your head's up at the all-in. You got the best hand, probably.
Crazy. All right. Apparently, we check again. So we're going to see a river card. It's the eight. It's an eight. Obviously, suits doesn't matter at this point. So ace, tray, four, king, eight is our final board, and the under the gun player bets $40. Our remaining opponent folds, and it's back to us.
Oh, I'm calling every day. For that amount of money, it's 10 to 1 on my money, and he didn't bet the ace, and he didn't bet the king. I mean, there's no way I'm not calling that, because what if I don't win the first one, but I win the second one? At least I get some of my money back.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, I'm calling that $40. I'm not raising, though.
Thing. I'm like, is this guy playing pocket eights? If so, great, but that's one more reason why we should have bet the last two streets, and we should have shoved in the preflop. So.
Yeah, I mean, there's $340 in the pot, basically. And I got to call 40 to win 340 with a pair of jacks, and no one bet the ace or the king. I think I might be good here.
Yeah, I'd be shocked if we're not good. So
I'm calling. We'll find
out. All right, our hero says with an only mental sigh, I fold as well. This just smells like a sucker bet. Wow.
Ugh.
Wow.
Wow. All
right, on a gun player shows 9-9, beating the player who won all in with 7-7.
Oh man. Well, that's a lot of pairs out in one.
It is, and fortunately, we dodged all those sets as well, too. All right, so our hero says, lots of questions here. I obviously overestimated the strength of hands against me. Yes, that's obvious. Should I have shoved pre-flop instead of calling $43 raise? Yes, that's what it said. In this instance, yes, it would have worked out, but I mean, in general, given the action, the appropriate range. Yes, in general, in the appropriate range, I mean, again, two splashy people, another gun player that didn't 4-bet, absolutely.
Yep, it's the story. You know, here's the story of another gun player who didn't raise again when he had a chance. You know, I mean,
no, very nice,
right? I mean, these people are telling you the story. You have to listen to it. And if the story doesn't make sense, then you know that you need to make the move that makes sense for those actions. And to me, I think a shove would have worked there, and then you would have isolated, and you would have won a decent sized pot.
He goes on to say, would it be a good play to bet on the flop or turn with my hand? Yes and yes.
Yes and yes. They were clearly all afraid of the ace. So you bet it as if you have it. Then you isolated the other person. If you lost to that person, well, you would have lost to him anyway. But now you don't have to, you know what I mean? But it's a good chance that they don't have a better hand, the ace in their hand. They had some sort of, like they did, they had a pair. So, yeah, I bet the turn and the river. I mean, the flop and the turn.
And definitely the turn. I mean, the flop, I can see you might get a little spooked that there's an ace, you know, laying in the weeds and ready to pounce on you. I mean, I still would have bet because I think you needed to there at that point. But when they check that around on the turn with the ace and the king, that's just like a green light to steal home and in the World Series without pulling Blake Snell in the sixth inning, right? So, So the final question, should Jack-Jack be in my three betting range pre-flop given a loose and sticky population? I think it's fairly borderline. All right, well, we said no. I mean, it could be. I mean,
if you really know these players, then and you think that there is reason to believe that they're all full of baloney, then yeah, there's nothing wrong with three betting or whatever it was at this point with the Jack-Jack. But in our what we described earlier was, you know, you still have that weird limper under the gun. And a lot of times people just are like, oh, I'm going to get real creative here and limp under the gun. No one will suspect a thing when I have ace-ace. But the news came later when they merely called again that you knew they didn't have the ace-ace. But when it came to you the first time around, Jack-Jack is really not a three-betting hand there. Plus, you still had the hijack, the cutoff, the button, and the blinds behind you to act. So now you raise, and they wake up with a better hand, and they shove. And now you're like, oh, I'm going to put my whole 300 stack on the line with Jack-Jack? I don't think so. But once you get more information from the stories they're telling, then it made sense to maybe shove preflop after all of those other things. But the first time it gets to you, no, I don't think that that's a rebetting hand now.
Yeah, really, it's a summation of all the information we have available to us. So, yeah. You know, we have a player that we've determined is splashy. We have an under-the-gun limp, which is always scary, potentially scary. And then, as you mentioned, all the players left to act after. All the things together is where the three-bet shrinks in my mind. So,
tune in next week for the final Brandon Huff hand and the completion of an O'Malley's move. I'm Chris Cosenza.
And I'm Scott Locke.
We'll see you at the table.
Ante Up is a production of AnteUpMagazine.com. Contact the show at podcast@AnteUpMagazine.com. If you'd like to advertise, send an email to advertising@AnteUpMagazine.com or call 727-331-4335. Some music used in this episode comes courtesy of the PodSafe Music Network.